DW Africa Link.
World AIDS Day commemoration is here again. And this year's theme, Take the Right Path, My Health, My Right, reminds us that access to healthcare is not a privilege, but a fundamental human right. Join us as we explore the global fight against HIV/AIDS, uncover the barriers still faced by millions, and spotlight the inspiring stories of resilience and advocacy. Together, let's learn how empowering individuals with their rights can transform health outcomes and create a world where no one is left behind. Stay tuned, because this is a conversation that affects us all. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
More than 40 years after the HIV/AIDS epidemic began, remarkable progress has transformed the landscape of the disease. Antiretroviral therapy, ART, has turned HIV into a manageable condition, and prevention tools like PrEP have significantly reduced new infections. In Africa, over 75% of those living with HIV in sub-Saharan Africa now access ART, with Zambia achieving over 90% coverage through strategies like test and treat and strong community education. However, challenges such as rural access disparities and funding gaps persist. The key question remains: how do we ensure everyone benefits from these advances? For this very important discussion, I'm joined by DW's correspondent in Zambia, Kathy Short, and Dr. Mainza Bubala, also from Zambia, who is a researcher into HIV and AIDS. I'll start with you, Kathy, just as our reporter on ground, just an overall overview. How has the global response to HIV/AIDS evolved over the past decade? And what role have advancements in science played in this progress, in your opinion, especially when we look at a country like Zambia?
I think we've made tremendous progress worldwide in terms of the fight against HIV/AIDS. This issue is very personal to me because I lost both my parents to HIV/AIDS. So I faced it, you know, at a very, very personal level. And at the time, they were both sick. There were no medications like we have today. And so I lost both my parents like that. So the past decade, we've seen tremendous improvement, in my opinion, in terms of HIV/AIDS response globally. I think also the international community has got together with the help of the World Health Organization. We've seen PEPFAR fund through the U.S. Government Presidential Initiative, and also the global funds, and also UNAIDS coming up, and also all these international organizations and governments coming together to strengthen the fight against HIV/AIDS. At the time my parents were passing on, you know, like maybe 2006, somewhere there, you know, in the early 2000s, there were lots of deaths in Zambia. Almost, you know, lots of people were affected, and the lifespan was very, very low. But we can see now that the past decade, a lot of people are living longer lives. According to some statistics here in Zambia, people are living up to 68 years, or in terms of those that are, you know, are HIV positive. The lifespan has been increased. And then also we are seeing them living healthier lives. So things are getting better overall. And you cannot even tell these days that someone is HIV positive because of the major strides that have been made in science. Also, we've seen accessibility to different medications that people are on. And I think it's a win for the world, really.
Right, right. Now, going to you, Dr. Mainza Bubala, you are an expert on this topic. Obviously, you're in the medical field. Can you explain how antiretroviral therapy has been a game changer, how it works, and also we've seen it's been managing HIV in people. Like also Kathy just mentioned that now even the lifespan has increased.
And again, I think many people share the story of Kathy. We've all experienced the losses that HIV/AIDS caused many years back. ARVs, antiretroviral therapy, has significantly been influential in changing the course and impact of HIV globally. I must state that at the inception and discovery of ARVs, I think there was a lot of concern. There was a lot of expectations as to what ARVs would do, in as far as influencing the impact of HIV. A lot of misconceptions as to whether this would be a cure. This would be, early on in the 90s, and this is a time when really the life expectancy for, an average person living with HIV, was around 19 years or so. For a 20-year-old man around, it was a mere 19 years old. What antiretroviral drugs do, and is that they do not kill the virus, the HIV virus, but actually what they do is affect the life cycle of the virus. This is a triple therapy treatment that is given. So it's a combination of three different elements of ARVs. And each of those ARVs work at different stages of the life cycle of virus. So what you get is a comprehensive treatment pill. And I must again remind us to say many years back, a few years back, it meant that people would take these drugs in, three different formats. So you get to get three different pills, or you get to have two different pills. And advances in research and development are now able to put these different compounds, the three different drugs, into one single tablet that you get to take once a day. And it was difficult before to introduce a single tap, a single dose of the ARV, the three different drugs that work on HIV. For the different age bands, I think we saw over time that adults are more likely to receive these drugs in the early inception, especially once, a new brand has been introduced and released by FDA. Whilst you find that the challenge remains that, find that people like the children and those who are pregnant, you find that in the initial stages of ARVs being introduced, a brand or a regime or a brand of the ARVs being introduced, like the single pill TLD, you find that it's not available to all the age bands all the subpopulations of different people, like pregnant women. But generally, really, what we have is that antiretroviruses have been effective in reducing the extent to which the virus is able to replicate in your body, therefore slowing its effect on the immune system that a person has. And that's why we're able to see, those on ART now able to fight, on infections, because their immune system is able to hold against the virus that previously would massacre the immune system, massacre the white blood cells, and render them ineffective on very simple conditions, which in a normal person who may not be living with HIV, those infections may not significantly affect them. So in a nutshell, ARVs, and again, if you go to the science side of it, there are different classes of ARVs, that work on the different levels. But the whole package of an ARV drug is to enable it to render the HIV virus ineffective on the immune system that a person has.
Right, right. Now, you know, I've seen that many years ago, people used to, should I say, were more scared of contracting this virus, the HIV. But recently now, when I think there's been some medications introduced like PrEP and PEP, I feel like when you look at other countries like South Africa, people have started again relaxing, feeling like, oh, I can just take this and play around and then after this, take that. What role do these medications like PrEP and PEP play in preventing HIV transmission, and how effective are they, Dr. Bubala?
Thank you very much, Josie. And again, you know, in recent time, the context you've described again in South Africa, we see it quite generally, even here in Zambia. And again, I must say, from the DAP perspective, we interact with a lot of people at community level. Our whole model engages directly with clients and people in the communities. And we get some of these feedbacks firsthand, where you see a person refusing either to take the PrEP or out of, you know, fear, the stigma, and so forth. And right now, the biggest challenge we have in Zambia is that even amongst those who are likely to be initiated on PrEP and PEP, the retention levels, the continuity of care on those preventive therapies is very poor. So, you know, we are battling, and this is a big discussion at national level, and then for us as a project to say, how do we get the people that we put on PrEP to be able to actually continue it as long as they remain at risk? So what PrEP is a drug. So pleasingly so now we have an injectable drug. Before it was an oral drug. So it's just a combination. PrEP is just a combination of two ARV drugs, which is supposed to help somebody who is HIV negative to prevent them from actually contracting the HIV virus. So in Zambia and in many countries, I think we have guidelines supporting who should benefit, who is eligible to be put on PrEP. These are often high-risk clients. You know, we have clients like those who are in a discordant relationship. By discordant, we mean where one of the partners is HIV positive and the other one is negative, and the negative one needs to protect themselves from contracting the HIV from their other partner. We also introduce these in key populations, you know, such as PWIDs, those who use injectable drugs and so forth. And these are high risk categories of clients who are likely to contract the virus. So what PrEP does is that, you know, you take it you then protect yourself. There's a guideline. For instance, in females, you would have to take it for about 21 days prior to you engaging into a sick, you know, either a high risk activity, either a sexual contact with someone with HIV or, you know, drug related injectables and so forth. So what you do for men, it's, you know, they have to take for about 7 days prior. So it's been very effective. It's been very effective, but again, there are a lot of misconceptions around PrEP locally at community level, with especially in communities with low literacy levels. It is sometimes perceived to be ARVs. People perceive when they see you taking PrEP, they assume you are actually taking you're actually HIV positive and you are on the full tripotherapy of ARVs, which people take for treatment. So we're battling with those misconceptions, but generally PrEP has yielded it's effective in protecting those that are at high risk. We need to kind of invest into making sure that people are remaining adherent, and as long as they continue being exposed to risk, they do not fall off treatment. They need to continue to take in the high risk. I think a lot of people let their guard down. And I must say, we've had cases, by the way, Josie, where a client who was previously on PrEP stopped taking PrEP, and then they engaged in high risk behavior, and then they come and present themselves with HIV, you know? So it means there was a missed opportunity. All they needed to do was to stay on the PrEP, and then they would have, prevented themselves from actually contracting. With regards to PEP, just in brief, I'll say again, PEP, this is an emergency drug we give to prevent also HIV, contracting HIV. But when we have a confirmation or a high suspicion of existing exposure to HIV, and we give it to victims of sexual abuse, gender-based violence, sexual abuse. So we give it to them within 72 hours, right. And that increases the chance of them not contracting the HIV even after they've already been exposed to it.
Right. Now, you've really touched on a lot, and it's now clear even for our listeners on the difference of those medications. But Kathy, you are a reporter. What are some of the most groundbreaking recent developments in HIV or AIDS treatment or prevention that you've reported on, and also just the stigma that comes with it, how people don't even want to speak on camera when it comes to HIV and AIDS?
Yes, it's very difficult to get people on camera, especially, you know, to talk about their HIV status, because society is still stigmatizing against people living with HIV/AIDS. But also, I've been very, very excited as a reporter to see how, you know, the advancements in science and medicine have just been breathtaking. I think a very, very, you know, big congratulations to our medical teams here in Zambia and all over the world, the scientists that are working so hard with all these groundbreaking therapies that are coming up. For instance, recently, Zambia was one of the first countries, I think, outside the United States to start the treatment, the injectable cabotegravir, the injectable, in Mazabuka, one of the centers where they started implementing that. And also seeing the young ladies who are at high risk in Mazabuka, you know, begin to take PrEP and tell us their stories on how it's been difficult to take the oral medication and how they used to forget. And now they can just have an injection, you know, within a few weeks apart or months apart, depending on what someone is taking. So it's been really, really nice to see that. And, you know, it sort of demystifies the HIV AIDS virus, and also brings a face to the whole pandemic, HIV fight. And also to see these young people live their lives wholly, and also, you know, not take it as a death sentence. So I think these breakthroughs have brought about a lot of hope. Yeah, and also to see the work that DAP is doing in Petauke and also the other areas, it's been very, very insightful and heartwarming.
Right. Now, Dr. Bubala, we now want to talk about a lasting solution. We've had an antiretrovirals, as you explained, a PrEP, PEP. But why is it so hard, or why are our scientists finding it so hard to find cure for HIV and AIDS?
Thank you, Josie. Again, that's a million dollar question. I must say, we with all the advancements in research and development, accelerated outputs when it comes into either injectable, whether vaccinations, whether preventive therapies. Certainly, it is proving a big challenge to actually come up with a cure for HIV. And there are so many factors to that. Generally, the biggest battle we have is that, you know, the way the HIV virus actually affects the body, it almost renders it impossible for it to, you know, it renders it extremely difficult for you to disaggregate the virus completely out of your system, because it binds to the genetic system of your cells. So pretty much your being. So the science to actually act on a selective way of being able to pick the virus, kill it without you needing to kill your own cells is proving to be quite a challenge. But I think that there is quite a lot of hope. There are a lot of simulations. There are a lot of currently a lot of studies, trials which are being done by multiple pharmaceuticals, multiple companies that are actually practicing several models of how it would be possible to actually get a cure for HIV. I think the recent COVID situation proved to us that it is possible to actually kind of fast track research into some of these emerging conditions, some of the, including the existing ones that have been very challenging, that have been very difficult to surmount. Conspiracies, there's a lot of perceptions around, what would it would actually mean to get a cure for HIV. We remain hopeful. Science has proven to us that, over time it is possible to even some of the most difficult conditions in the past have been possible to be eradicated by innovations that kind of changed the dynamics of how, certain drugs can actually work on bacteria or viruses. So we remain quite hopeful, but I think it's at the moment, because of how the virus actually works, I think it's proving to be the biggest headache that any researcher, a vaccination company, drug.
Many thanks to DW's correspondent in Zambia, Kathy Short, and Dr. Mainza Bubala. At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. South Africa faces significant challenges with HIV/AIDS among youth, who account for a large share of new infections. Limited access to sexual education, low uptake of prevention tools like PrEP, stigma, and gender-based violence increase vulnerability, especially for young women. Economic hardships and unemployment also drive risky behaviors. Addressing these issues require better education, youth-friendly healthcare, and efforts to reduce violence and inequality. We went to the streets of Johannesburg to find out what the challenge could be, and this is what we found out.
People who take advantage of them, older people who are more manipulative in terms of the way that they maneuver themselves around the youth for their own personal gains. You'll find that a person will focus especially on the fact that a youth is not getting what they need from home. Therefore, they promise them soft life. And in so doing, they manipulate the youth to think that the life of having sex without prevention is the way to go, because they, according to them, that is what is right. So they will use tactics in terms of looking at where the downfalls are within the youth, understanding that, okay, this one lacks money, so I will offer them what they don't have.
I think the youth should learn more about HIV and AIDS, in understanding the causes, symptoms, and consequences of HIV and AIDS, and prevention strategies to practice safe sex, use condom correctly, avoid sharing needles, do not share needles or other injecting equipment, and having healthy relationships, communicating well with your partner, and respect boundaries.
What I can say is drugs and alcohol can play a major role, because remember, these people, they're under the influence of the use of the drugs and alcohol. So it doesn't mean that they're responsible. I'm sorry if I'm putting it in a harsh way, but being drunk or being under the influence of alcohol, it also plays a role, because they end up doing or taking decisions that they're not good for them. Yes.
The campaigns are not working. The campaigns are not directly targeted to students, that the interventions that are being taken by government aren't reaching the young people, which is a common message across everyone. We are not getting interventions. We are not getting help from the government.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a key part of our community. Your engagement can significantly influence the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Kelechi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening, and it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.